TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's 7:10, 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. As we are waiting for Congressman Mark Sanford to call in, we'll be talking with him coming up in just a moment. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Also this morning, going to be talking about this new rent-a-bike program that we are, it starts today here in Charleston. And we will give you some details on that and what all is involved in that. Also going to be talking about Ashley Hall Plantation. This is one of the oldest plantations in the country. And they are looking at developing it, basically getting rid of it. And my real concern is that 50 years from now, people are going to look back at Charleston and go, why on earth would they do that? Why would they take a historical site and put up condos or put up subdivisions or put up some sort of housing there? I think we are in real danger of, you know, we got a gym here. We really do. We have a gym here in Charleston. And I think we're in real danger of destroying it very soon. All right, let's go to the phones right now and talk to Congressman Mark Sanford. He's on with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning to you.
Let's talk a little bit about this budget that was proposed. You called it a Goldilocks economy. You said the numbers were a lie. Not only a myth, but they were a lie. Tell us a little bit about that.
But what's left out of those comments was I said, one, I think it's great that the president's budget actually proposes balance.
Mm-hmm.
The previous administration never, ever, ever, ever even tried to get the balance.
Right.
I think that that's a very important thing. I guess my catch was this, The average economic expansion in the history of our republic has been 56 months.
Mm-hmm.
There's a up and a down. There's a, it's like the tide going in and the tide going out in the low country.
Right.
You have economic expansions, but you also have recessions. It's called the economic cycle, and it's not dead. We're now in the third longest economic expansion in American history. It's 96 months. And it's been anemic. It's been weak, but it has been long lasting. There's been great duration to this economic cycle. The problem, and there are a number of different problems, but one of the problems with the budget was it assumed for the next 10 years we won't have an economic downturn, though we're in the third longest economic expansion in the history of our republic. We'll go another 200 and something months without a downturn. And I don't think that that's realistic. And so you begin to add in things like that, and you say, wait a minute, this is a bit optimistic. I want the economy to grow. I hope it'll grow. Regulation reform, tax reform, things like that are good. They will help the economy, but they're not going to wipe out the economic cycle. We're going to have a downturn at some point. I suspect it's going to be sooner rather than later.
So as the budget stands right now, would you be a big supporter of it? What would you like to see in it?
I'd like to see cuts. That was the other thing I congratulated the administration on. A lot of people will talk about cuts, but nobody will ever do them.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually proposed some cuts, which I think is good. The Appalachian Regional Commission was formed in the time of the Great Depression. I would argue that, to a great degree, it's outlived its usefulness. I love Panthers football. But, part of the money that built the practice fields that
right.
they used over in Spartanburg were based on the Appalachian Regional Commission saying that, part of Appalachia is Spartanburg, and so these practice fields are to help economic development in a place where we've got BMW and a whole host
right.
of other national and international concerns. So I think that it's good that the proposed balance. Here's the other big question. At the end of the day, if you look mathematically, you really can't balance a budget without ultimately reforming entitlement spending. It's about two-thirds of the pie. One-third of the pie is called domestic discretionary, they concentrate all the cuts in domestic discretionary. Domestic discretionary has actually been held constant due to sequester, budget caps, whatnot, over roughly, you know, the last number of years. You can only squeeze but so much blood from a turnip. And so do we really want to cut the State Department by a third? You could do it, but I would argue, you're still trying to squeeze blood from a turnip in a place that's tougher. The big money, the 80% rule of life, you know, 80-20, mm-hmm. is go to entitlements, because at the end of the day, we have a demographic time bomb that's going off in our country. We have 11,000 baby boomers retiring every day. We have 60 million baby boomers marching the way toward retirement. And so, you know, to lay out a budget that says we're not going to touch entitlements, we'll plus up defense $50 billion, but we'll make up all the savings on domestic discretionary, I think becomes difficult. And so my objection was twofold. It was not that there were cuts. I think it's important that there are cuts. But where the cuts were relative to where the big money is in our system. And it's not politically popular to talk about entitlement reform, but it is mathematically mm-hmm. necessary. You know,
right,
if
yeah.
not, you know, our kids and our grandkids are going to be left holding the bags on this thing. You know, and just to get on a rant for one more second, at the time of the Vietnam War, what was called, and you and I didn't make these policy decisions, but mm-hmm. they were made. Our government instituted what's called a unified budget. Every dollar that goes in immediately comes back out and is spent.
Right.
And all these trust funds represent basically IOUs with the future taxing authority of the United States government. If they'd left the money in the trust funds, Einstein was once asked, what's the most powerful force in the universe? His reply was compound interest.
Mm-hmm.
Those trust funds could have compounded and grown and compounded and grown. But they didn't do that. They put in place these IOUs, and those basically, you know, receipts, again, that represent the future taxing authority of the United States government, means at some point there's going to be a near generational war where young people saying, no, I, I'm the turnip. You can only squeeze so much blood for me. I can't give anymore. I'm worn out. I'm trying to, you know, do all the things that go with life, and you're trying to raise my FICA taxes
right.
yet again. I'm worn out.
Didn't we see the younger generations revolt in some way as far as Obamacare is concerned? Because they, in record numbers, they didn't sign up for Obamacare.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely right. And you saw that to the tune that millions and millions of young people said, no, I'm going to wait. But they were also incentivized to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you told the average person out there, tell you what, we're going to set up insurance in a way that after you get in your car wreck, you can sign up for auto insurance, or after your house burns down, you can sign up for a homeowner's policy, people would say, well, I'm not a dummy. I think I'll wait.
Right.
And so part of it was the incentives that were in place with the Affordable Care Act. And part of it is, again, people are squeezed. And, you know, if they have the choice between putting bread on the table and doing some of the other necessities of life and something that they figure, well, I'm pretty invincible right now. I'm pretty young and, you know, my body feels all right. I think I'll wait on this health insurance thing.
Right. As far as the health care bill is concerned, would this bill open up insurance to be bought across state lines? Could you go, if there's an insurance company in Minnesota that's offering a better plan than I have here in South Carolina, would the proposed health care bill right now allow me to go to that company in Minnesota?
It would. It would. And technically you can right now. The catch is with different insurance commissioners, you have different, basically, policies that are created by that locality. And so this would wipe out some of that. The fact is, if you actually look at the numbers, it's not the panacea that some people think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a helpful step, but it won't revolutionize. But because, you know, insurance is the financing mechanism for our health care. The cost of health care is what the cost of health care is. And the fact is, based on, you know, tort reform, based on, you know, the cost of real estate, based on a whole number of things, healthcare in Manhattan is going to be more expensive than it is in in certain parts of, let's say, more rural Florida.
Right.
And so it, again, is it of slight help? Yes, but it's probably not the panacea some people hope it might be.
Have you seen more support for this president over the past few weeks or less? Because I know, and you're having a breakfast this morning, breakfast with the congressman. I think a lot of people, especially callers to this show, are thinking, listen, if the House and the Senate don't start getting behind this president and working with him, then 2018 is going to be a disaster and 2020 is going to be a disaster. And we're going to be right back in the same boat or worse than we were under the Obama administration.
Yeah, that's the $94 question. And so what you're struggling with is this, which is, yeah, I mean, historically, presidents' budgets have, at some level, been used as a doorstop. I mean, the legislative body holds supreme with regard to spending based on what the Constitution said. But it's an outline, and it lays out priorities, and people react to it. And I mean, I've experienced that when I was governor. I mean, mm-hmm. I would spend all kinds of time producing executive branch budgets, and it was helpful. It led to conversations that led to other things, but some of it was immediately rejected. And so part of it's just, I guess, by function of different institutions, executive branch versus legislative branch. But, what you struggle with is this. You want to give support wherever you can, but at the same time, you want to be true to numbers that you know are real. And if you were betting your life savings or you bet in your house, would you bet on the economic cycle being dead in our state or, in our country? I don't know that you would. And so I think you have a duty to the people you represent at home to call an ace with regard to numbers. And I could give you a lot of other numbers. I mean, if you look at bottom line numbers, it's labor force growth and it's productivity that ultimately drive economic growth in a country. And so if you look at labor force growth, what they're presupposing in their labor force growth numbers is that we go back to what we saw in the 70s and 80s when women were entering the workforce for the first time at record numbers. Well, that probably isn't going to happen because a lot of them are already working. The ones that aren't, I don't know, you're going to drag them off to work. And so there's just some assumptions that are built in that are a bit, rosy or optimistic.
Right.
And I think it's important to call it ace and ace. Say, well, we're not there. Because if not, what we'll do in our House and Senate budgets is copy the same thing. That's why I made as much noise as I did. Because if we, at the end of the day, assume, I desperately want 3%.
Yeah. But, sure, you want 3% growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Gordon Sullivan was former chief of staff of the United States Army. And he wrote a book entitled, Hope is Not a Method. We all hope for certain things. But
sure.
It's important we base our big decisions on as much analysis and as much rationale as we can.
Right. Well, certainly, I know that a lot of callers to this show are very concerned about the 2018 elections and, of course, 2020. Congressman, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
All right, Congressman Sanford is having a coffee with your congressman right now at Chick-fil-A at 2013 Magwood Drive over in West Ashley. I really seriously hope the congressman understands the question that I posed to him about how angry Republicans are in this country about the lack of support that our president has right now. Well, The wheels of change turn slow. Well, they didn't seem to turn all that slow during the Obama administration, did they? It seems like once they came up with the Affordable Care Act, quote unquote, then that got done pretty quickly. Now, the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, in my opinion, is that the Democrats are completely willing to let this country go straight to hell. And it's again, I think that's the plan. You let this country go straight to hell. You wreck the economy. You wreck national security. You wreck the borders. You wreck immigration. You wreck health care. And then once it's all burned to the ground, you come in with your socialist platform and start saying, well, see what they did? Look at what they did. Now it's time to have a nice little socialist nation. They are completely willing to do that. And we saw that with Obamacare. They knew from the get-go that Obamacare was going to fail. Absolutely, 100%. And they were willing to let it die a horrible, painful death and then come in with single payer. That's what they wanted. That was their plan. They knew that your premiums were going to go up. They knew you were going to have less health care. They knew that your deductibles were going to be sky high. They knew you weren't going to be able to keep your doctor. They knew you weren't going to be able to keep your health care plan. And they knew that it was going to implode under its own weight. And they were completely willing to do that. The Republicans aren't willing to do that. However, if they don't start getting behind this president, then 2018 is going to be a disaster for the GOP, and 2020 is going to be an even bigger disaster for the GOP. I don't know who the Democrats are planning on running in 2020. It can't be Hillary Clinton. There's a lot of folks out there that are saying, you know, it's going to be Hillary. Hillary's going to run again. She'll take her third shot at the presidency. However, honestly, and this isn't being ageist or anything, I don't think Hillary Clinton would be able to stand up to the rigors of another campaign to do it effectively. Now, she may not have to. She may just be able to sit up there in Chappaqua and conduct everything from her house in the basement with another private server. And people would just turn out and vote for her. That may well happen. But the Democrats are completely willing to let everything be destroyed in order to come in and rebuild it with their platform. And like I said, the Republicans are not willing to do that, but they're going to have to start getting on board with this president and making sure that he's got the support that he needs in Washington. Because, from you guys' phone calls and the emails that I get, people are very upset. They're upset with Congressman Sanford. They're upset, certainly, with Lindsey Graham and John McCain and all of these other members of Congress. Now, like we said before, when things get tough, the Democrats will circle their wagons and protect their president. When things get tough for the Republicans, they make a circular firing squad and start shooting each other. And that's what's happening right now. This president, a lot of people are excited. A lot of people say, well, there's going to be a backlash in 2018. Oh, it's going to be a backlash against the Republicans. I don't think so. I don't think so. You look at the amount of people right now that are tuning in record numbers to left-leaning programs on television. Look at them right now. I mean, MSNBC is enjoying, look at Rachel Maddow. Rachel Maddow is enjoying incredible success in her ratings. Stephen Colbert, incredible ratings because he is on there and he's bashing Trump every single night. That message is powerful. That message is powerful. And you're going to see the Democrats coming out in 2018 in record numbers. You're going to see them coming out in 2020 in record numbers. And I am very concerned about the midterm elections and, of course, the elections in 2020. I am. I don't understand why these people in the House and the Senate can't understand that back in November, the American people voted for a president that they wanted his policies to be enacted. They wanted a wall. They wanted illegal immigration, illegal aliens. They wanted illegal immigration done away with. That's what they wanted. They wanted affordable health care, actual affordable health care. And in fact, most of them didn't want government health care at all. Jody's in Monk's Corner. How are you, Jody?
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Not much. Just wanted to make a comment on what you were saying about the midterm elections mm-hmm. and the elections in 2020. I really think you're right, and it's very, very scary to me. One thing that we have a problem with is all of these Republicans that we don't want in there that aren't supporting our president, no one's going to run against them.
Right.
And they're going to get in there again.
Yeah.
And it just, it sickens my stomach to even think about having to pull the lever and Lindsey Graham get back in.
Right. That's right.
That's all I had to say.
And it scares me to death, Judy. I appreciate you calling in. But remember, we support these people with two things. Two ways that we support the Republican candidates. Number one, we go to the polls and we vote for them. Number two, we write a check so that they can continue their campaigns. You start holding back that those campaign dollars and saying, listen, Senator Graham, until you start supporting the president that we voted for here in South Carolina, and he's doing a pretty good job about that right now. He's kind of changed his tune a little bit because I think he sees the writing on the wall. But these Republicans, you start withholding money from the RNC. Money talks. Money talks. And it speaks loudly.
WTMA. Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Good morning. It's about 8 minutes until 8 o'clock on the Big Talker, 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. If you want to rent a bike, you will be able to do that today, starting in Charleston. There's going to be about 27 different locations around downtown Charleston for the Charleston Bike Share Program. You can check out any of the 250 bicycles that have been set up at 27 different locations. It costs $8 an hour, $15 a month, or $69 a year to ride. That's a 30% discount if you sign up soon. My question is, who gets the money? I want to know who's paying for the bike, who's paying for the bike racks. You got to do this thing through an app. Now, it's a title partner with MUSC. There's going to be a ribbon-cutting ceremony at 11 o'clock this morning at MUSC Urban Farm. So we'll talk a little bit more about this because I'm not really sure. I want to know, was any taxpayer dollars spent on this? John's in North Charleston. John, how are you?
Oh, yeah, good morning. How you doing, John?
Good. What's up?
You know, some of the biggest lies I've heard when I hear an elected representative says, I'm an independent thinker. Nobody tells me what to think and do, right?
Right, yeah.
But then when legislation comes down, their benefactors get the rewards because they're the ones who they're receiving the money from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens most of the time. When you see these budgets and all of these things, there's no independent thinker. These guys have to be bought and paid for. And I guess the citizens now are going to have to realize they have to buy them just like everybody else buys them.
You know what happens to independent thinkers in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, they become unelected. That's right. Stupak about that. Remember Stupak?
Yeah.
Yeah. He wanted the Stupak Amendment in there. What happened to him? They got his vote and he got out.
They are never heard from again.
That's right.
They are put on. They're not even allowed to sit on a committee. They have to get. They get this little office. Not even office. It's a closet. And independent thinkers don't last long in Washington, D.C. I'll guarantee you that because,
it's,
you know,
basic. They tell us when we're in school to be that, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And the inclination of men is always wanting to control other men.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And we want to go down that path. I mean, I'm a black guy. You know, I hate slavery just like the next guy. But everybody wants to control somebody's thoughts and their actions, especially by giving them money. And I just think that people in the United States would want to reject that. But they don't. They must like being controlled by people with money. So they're no different than a pimp, politician, or player.
Right.
The only difference is that they hold elected office. But every time you look around, somebody, their benefactors, always gets the advantage of having access to them and getting them to do what they want to do because of money. So they shouldn't be mad at other people when they do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about influence and power in Washington. And we don't even say Washington. Let's say everybody that runs for office wants two things. They want influence and power.
But doesn't that happen all over the world in families and everything, right?
Yeah.
It works the same place in the household.
Yeah.
So there is no difference. So, I like I tell people, we have to buy these officials just like everybody else does, mm-hmm. because that's the only thing they respond to. They don't respond to integrity.
Right, and the best way that you have control over them, I mean, we can sit back and we can complain and write letters and make phone calls and all that we want to, but until you start hitting them where it really counts with them, and that's in those donations that we're making to their PACs and to their campaign,
right.
That's where you can really have the influence on it, by not writing that check.
Right, donations and primary and having a primary for every elected official every cycle.
Mm.
Even if that guy loses, let them know that, hey, we're watching you and we're thinking about you. We just want to reach out and touch you like AT&T.
There you go. All right, John, we appreciate it, buddy. Thank you. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. All right, back to this. I still don't know a whole lot about this bicycle program that's going to be, they're going to be cutting the ribbon on this thing at 11 o'clock this morning, where you'll be able to, you know, you down. It's kind of like an Uber sort of works the same way, where you say, all right, well, I'm tired of walking. I want to ride a bike. So I got my little app there, and the app will give me a code, and I push in the code, and it'll unlock the bike, and I'll be able to go along my way. $8 an hour. Like I said, $69 a year. So I want to know, where did the money for these bikes come from? And where did the money for the bike rack come from? And who's getting that $8 an hour?
And the power source to work on the rack.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
who's paying for that electricity?
They tried this a couple of years ago, as I recall, with these yellow bicycles.
Yeah, yeah. And happened to those bikes?
They all disappeared.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. somebody got a bike and a couple of cans of Krylon for $1 at Walmart, spray painted them, took the yellow off of them, and they've got their own bicycle right there.
Yep.
So I want to look. Let me just look out, because I was thinking about this morning. Let's just go to Craigslist, Charleston, and see how much a bike is. Just to take, you know, we'll just take a look and see where we can find a bicycle. Let's see if we can. Oh, there we go. Bikes. We will all bicycles. There we go. Here's one for $50. Here's one for $20. Here's one for another one for $60. That's nice. You can own a bike for less than that. Here's one. Let's see. Let's find some of the less expensive. Well, they got some crazy ones on here. Here's one for $1,100. I don't. You got to be a serious bicycle. Here's one for $1. A bike for $1. Here's one for $35, $40, $50. And that's pretty much the one of the price ranges you're going to see, is that $50 price range. So for less than a year on this bike share program, you can just own a bike. So they really want to promote bicycling here in South Carolina. And I think what they're trying to do is trying to make some sort of a justification for Charleston to be a bike-friendly community. That's what they want. But my thing is, the first thing you need to do as far as being a bike-friendly community is to make the bikers more friendly. Like I say, not a week goes by that I don't have some guy on a bicycle blow through a stop sign or swerve in and out of traffic, or they're riding up on the sidewalk or riding. I mean, geez, happened to me this weekend. Some guy cut right in front of me on a bike, and I thought, yep, yeah, we need to be more bike friendly.
The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Oh, look at your skin crawling. Hearing about those bed bugs. Three Charleston fire stations have been infested with bed bugs, apparently, according to officials. They were reported at Station 20 on Daniel Island, Station 7 and 13 on James Island. Charleston Fire Department officials say that once that the problem was identified, at the fire station on Daniel Island, firefighters were relocated to another station while a contractor proceeded with an inspection and cleaning of the station using chemical treatments, of course. That is just blah, blah, blah. I did not know this. I really did not know this. They actually have a dog that detects bed bugs. He was, yeah, that's his job. This dog was brought in to look around the station to find bed bugs. He alerted officials to a few on the mattress and some on the sofas at these stations. So that's ugh. I know it makes my skin crawl too. Now, if you want to know a little bit about bed bugs, they can hide, and they say you can pick them up almost anywhere. Now, thankfully for this, they are not known to actually transmit disease to humans. Okay. So, but they are they're creepy. They're horrible. They're not anything that you want around you. They are parasites and they do bite you, and they can live just about anywhere. I mean, they can live in the seams of your mattress. They can live in your baseboards. They can live in just clutter that you have around your house. And how they define clutter, I don't know, but anything that you're not using, I guess they would say that's pretty much clutter. Once inside, they can be very difficult to control, so you need to call in a specialist to take care of them. Blah, 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 blah. Now, I will read, this is from the Orkin website. It is possible that bed bugs can carry diseases. However, they are not known to transmit diseases to people. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. So, doesn't this seem like it's just over the past couple of years that the whole bed bug problem has started to spring up again? We started hearing about it a lot. And I know when I go to a hotel, I'm always like really, really taking a look at that mattress and trying to see if there may be anything there that wants to feed on me during the night. Let's go to the phone right now and talk to Brad Franco. He's over at News 2 this morning. Brad, bed bugs in the firehouses. That's not good.
No, it's not. And, you know, this isn't just a problem that Charleston has had.
Right.
We reported on the issue Berkeley County had. We've heard about Myrtle Beach. And to be honest, you know, having grown up with my dad, my brothers are firefighters.
Right.
It's kind of striking that it hasn't happened before.
Yeah.
Or happened more often.
That's
because
true.
All it takes is, you know, one hitchhiker, you know?
Yeah.
You go into one house, one of those things hitchhikes, there it is.
You're, yep.
You know, the infestation starts. The concern is very real, though, about getting rid of them a little quicker. Why is it taking so long to get rid of these things? And why are we having a reinfestation problem? I think that's the biggest question and biggest concern for our firefighters.
Right. Yeah. I mean, certainly you can imagine these guys are not very happy that this is going on. But I think the life cycle of a bed bug is about 300 days, but they can lay 2 to 5 eggs a day.
Nasty.
And then those eggs hatch and they lay eggs, and you get the creeps just thinking about it.
It's expensive too.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about what they're having to do to get rid of them. You know, tossing furniture, tossing beds.
Right.
You know, paying to have the special canines, the dogs that are trained to find these things.
Yeah.
And then the treatments for it. So this is, you know, this isn't cheap either.
That's true. That's true. What else are you guys working on over at News 2 this morning?
Well, you know, it's hot outside. It's
oh, yeah.
And humid, so we got that to deal with. You know, there's the bed bugs thing. We're also looking at Glory Williams is back in court today.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, she's the woman in Walterboro who is accused of kidnapping Kamaya Mobley from the hospital
right.
in Jacksonville 18 years ago.
18 years.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that'll certainly be an interesting case to watch. Any word on how the child is doing?
You know, there was that interview. She gave a couple of interviews right after Williams' arrest.
Yeah,
you know, the kid is sharp. She is really. She seems to be really. You know, this could be a very traumatic thing, obviously,
right. Yeah.
for a kid to go through, and you can imagine how torn she is, but. She looked at it as she got another family out of the deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, she. I don't know how much contact or how much connection she has with her biological family, but she said she was going to stand by Glory Williams while this was going on. And, you know, there was that video of her having a conversation with her after the arrest. So It seemed on the surface like she's doing okay.
Yeah.
And we can only hope that that's the way it continues for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Tiger Woods, any more about this DUI arrest that he got? I mean, I'm kind of leaning on Tiger's side on this thing. He's saying he didn't know that the drugs that he was taking, obviously for his back, hopefully, would interact the way they did. But picked up at, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, what are you doing at
yeah, right.
3 o'clock in the morning? Yeah. Not a whole lot of good going on at that point, so you got to wonder. You have to believe him at this point, I think, because
yeah.
Why would you put that statement out there if you knew the tests were going to show otherwise?
Yeah, if it could be debunked.
In other words, why would you say you didn't have alcohol in your system when if the police can hold up a report that says you did?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's four back surgeries, and he just had that fourth one.
Yeah.
I want to say at end of April, mid of April.
Right.
Somewhere around in there. So, not unrealistic at all that he'd still be using pain medication.
No, not at all. Not at all. And you guys going to be riding any of these new bikes downtown Charleston?
No, I think whoever came up with Holy Spokes needs to get an award.
Yeah.
The award needs to be giant, tremendous, and unbelievable, because that is the best name of a company ever.
Right. It's really a good name.
Well done. Whoever did it.
Definitely. All right, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Amen.
Thank you very much, Brad Franco from News 2. WTMA.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Good morning. It's 8:21, 21 minutes past 8 o'clock on the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. Let's go out to Mike on James Island. How are you, Mike?
Hey, good morning, Charlie. How are you, sir?
Good, good. What's on your mind today?
Quick question. Had you seen anything about this gentleman up in New York named Jacob Swart, president of the young DNC?
Right.
And the, I guess, part of Cuomo's regime up there,
yeah.
And arrested for child pornography?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything about this since Friday.
Oh, I'm doubting you're going to see anything on,
right. That's right.
On the broadcast news of any sort.
Man, no, of course not.
It appears to be one very sick individual,
yeah.
With child pornography going back to small children.
Six months old.
Unreal.
6 months old.
And this guy worked as a campaign person for Obama.
Right.
Working for Cuomo, president of the Young Democrats.
Yeah.
There in New York City. Anyway, just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, Mike. I appreciate you calling in. Now, what this ties into was Hillary Clinton's commencement speech at Wellesley University. Wellesley University. She gave a commencement speech where basically she said, listen, and she's talking about the whole Pizzagate thing that talks about this, the possibility of there being a worldwide pedophilia ring. And I don't doubt that one little bit, and I'll tell you why in a second. So she said that the Republicans and the folks on the quote-unquote alt-right are trying to put forth these conspiracy theories about pedophilia rings in the United States. And she's like, blah, 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 you know. Oh, and by the way, she also said that Nixon was impeached, and she wasn't. Her husband was impeached. Nixon was not. So this young kid, Jacob Swartz, 29 years old, had 3,000 pornographic images of underage children and 3,089 videos on a laptop that he downloaded from the internet. And Hillary Clinton wants you to think that there was no, you know, there's no pedophilia ring in this country or on the planet. So I was watching a movie this weekend. Great movie. It's called Lion. And it's about this young kid in India and very poor, dirt poor, literally dirt poor. His mom carries rocks for a living. And he gets lost on a train. He accidentally gets on the wrong train and is taken like 1,200 or so miles away. He speaks Hindi. He doesn't speak, you know, the language that they speak there, where he ultimately ends up. So he spends 25 years with another family over in Australia. And it shows what he goes through, where he's in this orphanage. There's just thousands of children in these orphanages, and he escapes some people that tried to do bad things to him and things like that. But at the end of the movie, they put up some information there at the end of the movie. 80,000 children. Now listen to this. 80,000 children go missing in India each year. 80,000 children go missing. That's just in India alone. So you could just imagine almost the entire population, we'll say two-thirds of the population of Charleston going missing a year. And you don't think something's going on? You need to get your head out of the sand. You need to do that. Let's go to John Steinberger this morning. John, you going to get you a bike and ride around downtown Charleston today?
Oh, that's what I live for, Charles.
Yeah. Me too, buddy.
This is part of an organized agenda. It's called New Urbanism, among other things. But we'll just say New Urbanism. And the fundamental principle is that by driving our cars, we're contributing to global warming.
Right.
The mayor of Charleston and some of our city councilmen have used the phrase, we need to get people out of their cars.
Mm-hmm.
And this West Ashley master plan is going to include drawings showing hundreds of miles of bike paths. Now, who knows what the cost is going to be?
Right.
There's a group called Charleston Moves, which is funded by left-wing groups, and they try to create the illusion that everybody wants to ride their bike.
Yeah.
Imagine what you'd smell like riding your bike to the studio there in North Charleston.
It wouldn't be pleasant. So, So I'm wondering, John, you know, who's paying for all of this? Are the taxpayers paying for this company to come in and charge you $8 an hour to rent a bike?
Not to my knowledge. I think they've pilot tested this on college campuses. You know, college kids love riding their bike.
Mm-hmm.
It was effective there. And you know, the other factor that people need to look at is the safety issue. It's really not safe having bicycles on the road. And you know, it makes everybody drive defensively. And oftentimes they're not really observant of what the cars are doing, and they'll dart out in the middle of the road.
And,
people are going to get hurt.
Absolutely. Like I said, not a week goes by that somebody doesn't pull out in front of me going home. Not a week goes by.
They usually seem kind of nonchalant about it, too.
Yeah. They will flip you off in a heartbeat. So, John, let me ask you, Ashley Hall Plantation, are they going to develop this thing?
Well, the city council is going to decide whether to annex the county property into the city and zoning would allow them to build over 60 homes there. So that was the developer's original intent. And by the way, if you ever drive that road at this time of the day, you're not going anywhere.
It's right.
Cut through road from Ashley River Road, Highway 61. And anybody that buys property there will have a hard time even getting onto the road.
Yeah.
But there's been talk of the developer pulling the plans. We don't know if that's the case, but it's a historic property.
Sure it is.
People should have made a greater effort to preserve it before it even went on the market,
Right. Where
it got sold by a family's estate. It's about 44 acres. It's pristine land and on the water on the Ashley River. And a greater effort should have been made to preserve that property.
I agree. I think we're going to look back, 50 years from now and go, what were they thinking? What was that city council thinking?
So. Yeah, they have $3 million to buy the pig, and they couldn't find $4.4 million to preserve this historic property.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. All right, John, we appreciate you calling in. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. It makes you scratch your head as far as what we're thinking right now. I think we're so hell-bent on development right now that we're not really taking – remember, what we are building right now, every home that goes up, every road that's built, every property that's annexed, you are annexing that from future generations. And future generations might look back at you and think, thanks, but no thanks. I don't appreciate you doing that. And I don't know, sometimes I sit back and think, this town has really got about another decade and a half of being known as a historic area. I don't think you're going to recognize it very soon.
1250 WTMA. The TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Tell you what we do right now. I've got a family four-pack of tickets to give away to go see the River Dogs play any 2017 River Dog home game out at the Joe. I'll take caller number 7 right now at 556-1250. That's 556-1250. You pick yourself up a family four-pack of tickets to go see the River Dogs play. You don't want to miss out on that. Boy, I tell you what, they always put on such a great show, and it's just, you know, it's more than just baseball out there at the Joe. And if you haven't been to the new Riley Park, oh my goodness, pop your head in there when you go out to the Joe and check that out. It is, you know, rarely do you see a design drawn up and then the actual thing actually live up to the design. It's always just like, oh, well, this is nice. But out there, it surpasses every design picture that I saw. It is so much better than that. And the packages they offer out there are fantastic. But right now, this family four-pack of tickets to go see any 2017 River Dogs game at the Joe. And I'll say good morning. Who's this?
Mark.
Mark, how are you on this Tuesday?
Doing great.
Mark, congratulations, buddy. You just won those four tickets to go see the River Dogs play. How about that, man?
That's awesome, man. I love going.
Isn't it a fun time?
Yes, it is.
Oh, man. Then the food, I always say the Joe's the best restaurant in Charleston. They are fantastic. All right, buddy, I'm going to put you on hold. Congratulations, Mark. John Quincy will get some information from you this morning so you can get out there and watch the River Dogs play. We'll have more of those tickets to give away to you coming up tomorrow morning. As I was telling you a little bit earlier, I got a chance to watch two things this weekend. We watched one movie called Lion that I was just telling you about a few minutes ago. It's one of those movies that I wasn't all fired up about. I had heard about it and I'd read some things about it, but it wasn't one of those things like, oh, I got to go see this. So we rented it online, Sheila and I did, and it was phenomenal, phenomenal. This little kid gets lost in India, gets on the wrong train. A train that was out of service. But he gets locked in there and it takes him about 1,200 miles or more away from his town. Now, this little 4-year-old kid, he doesn't know the name of his town really. He doesn't. They ask him what his mother's name is. He says, Mom, you know, and things like that. Didn't really speak the language where he ended up. So it was very hard for him to communicate. And he was adopted eventually by a family in Australia. Well, then in about 2008, there comes along this little program called Google Earth. And he sets out, and it really consumed his life and started to destroy his life as far as how much he was consumed by finding his family. But he did not give up. He didn't quit, even though, you know, it was affecting relationships and work and all of that. But he finally found this little village that he had grown up in. And it's just a really good story. The young actor that played the young 4-year-old kid, he was brilliant in the role. So anyway, come to find out at the end of the movie, they're starting to tell you a lot about what's going on in India. 80,000 kids go missing every single year. Every year. That is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. The other thing I watched was a documentary called The Red Pill. And I told you about this before. It's about this woman who, she was a documentary filmmaker. Now, the reason she got into making documentary films was she felt like, she was an actress in Hollywood. She had, like, at the age of 19 or 20 or something like that. She went out to Hollywood to make her way in the acting community, and she found out that she was being kind of typecast in a lot of movies because she was, I guess they call them a scream queen. She was cast in all of these horror movies. She had a yell, you know, she could scream really good. So she got typecast into that, and that wasn't fulfilling for her. So she really started getting into the feminist movement. And she saw this thing online. I think it was on Reddit. There's a subreddit called The Red Pill. and it is about the men's rights movement here in this country. The underground, we'll have to say the underground men's rights movement. So she said, I'm going to investigate this. I'm going to do a documentary about it because I'm going to shut down this men's rights movement. So I'm going to shut down these people. So she went into it, not necessarily with an open mind, but at least she wanted to hear what the people that were in the men's rights movement, she wanted to hear what they had to say. And I would say she was very fair with listening to them. But the more she went down the rabbit hole, the more she found out that these men had a point. And the, I don't even know if you can call it, and still it's kind of tough to call it discrimination, but it is. That's exactly what it is, that men are being discriminated against in this country. Men are being discriminated in the court system. Did you know that a man and a woman who are charged with the same crime, the man will get 60 times more jail time than the woman? 60 times. Now, an African-American man will get about six times more, according to statistics, and unfortunately, this does happen. An African-American male will get six times more than a white male for the same crime. But a man in general, will get 60 times more jail time for the same crime that a woman commits. Men are always, as far as domestic dispute cases, there are men out there who, and by the way, there's this big thing about, you know, domestic violence. And it's a horrible thing. Absolutely. Across the board, it's a horrible thing. They say about 3 million women a year are victims. No, 4 million women each year are victims of domestic violence. 3.5 million men are victims of domestic violence. However, there are 3,000 women's shelters across the country. 3,000 women's shelters. None of them admit men. And in fact, if you're a woman in a shelter and you have to go there and you have to bring your family and your son is there with you and your son is over the age of 9, you can't go because he's a male. You cannot go to that shelter. There is only one men's shelter in the United States. One. But yet the numbers with victims of domestic violence, there's a little bit of parity there. So that's one of the things that they go on to say. Gender studies at colleges. You can go to the College of Charleston and take a course in gender studies. They are all feminist oriented. Every single one of them is a feminist philosophy, except for one that they're starting at the college at New York University. They're starting a men's gender studies. You know who it's going to be taught by? Gloria Steinem. Yeah. That's right. So it's basically going to be a course telling men how horrible they are. It's a fascinating. Well, the last line in the movie, the woman said, she said, "I no longer call myself a feminist." And it's very, very interesting to find out that disparity between men and women in this country. And the, you know, they talk about the pay gap. The big reason, one of the reasons for the pay gap is that men take more high risk jobs. Men are six times more likely, I think it's even more than that, to die on the job. Men are more likely to commit suicide. Men are more likely to drop out of school at an early age. Men are more likely to be homeless. Men are more likely to die of cancer. Men are more likely to commit suicide. But yet, men are just as likely as women to die of prostate cancer as women are breast cancer. But the focus is on breast cancer. There's not enough funding and not enough. I mean, when's the last time you saw a good men's prostate cancer march? It will absolutely blow your mind to watch this thing. It's called The Red Pill. You can get it online.
WTMA. Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
Good morning. I was telling you about that movie, The Red Pill. Let me just put a little addendum to that. I believe that if a woman does the same job as a man with the same skill and the same ability, then that woman should make the same amount of money as a man. Absolutely. If you are if you work for, I don't know, Comcast, and you are one of the line techs there on Comcast, one of the folks that comes out and installs your cable and all of that and does that, and you do as good a job as a man, you get the same pay. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. In fact, I think that ought to be the way it is. I mean, you should just pay the job, not the gender, okay? I will say, though, if your job requires you, you should not give special compensation to females on the job if there are certain requirements. Say the job says that you have to be able to lift 100 pounds. And you're a woman and you can only lift 50 pounds, then, sorry, you're not cut out for the job. Just the way it is. I mean, and we're talking about, for safety and things like that. So if you can do the same job, you ought to get paid for the same job, without a doubt. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. If you have a child at home and you have a car seat, well, some of those regulations just got changed for the first time since 1983. Governor Henry McMaster has signed a new law. It does not change how the regulations are enforced. However, it does change some things about it. The change stems from a policy statement in 2011 from the Journal of Pediatrics that say children should be kept in rear-facing seats until they're 2 years old. Previously, only children under one or weighing 20 pounds or less had to be in rear-facing seats. Now, you can be fined up to $150 for that, but I'm okay with that, too. I tell you what, I did a training thing one time. It's just it was like a public service deal where I went out and they were showing people how to install a car seat properly. It's a lot harder than it looks. The lady that was showing me, she said, listen, if you're not breaking a sweat by the time you get this thing installed, you didn't do it right. So make sure those kids are buckled up. Congratulations to a local judo duo. They brought home gold last month at the Pan American Judo Championships in Panama City. Dr. Lisa Capriotti, a U.S. Navy veteran, and her husband, Robert Guothro, each won two gold medals while representing the United States at the event. In addition to their shared love of judo, they have another passion for education. Cipriotti is a professor at the Citadel, and Guthro teaches at Fort Dorchester Elementary School. So, congratulations to those guys. I like that. All right. Oh, I don't know if you remember, but back during the bridge run, the Cooper River bridge run, there was a guy out there. He made national news. His name's Henry Middleton, and he is a bellman at the historic Charleston Hampton Inn. It has been for the past 11 years. Well, they call him Happy Henry, and apparently he got some national attention because there was video of him giving high fives to all the runners as they went by. It was really, really cool. He is going to be given a national honor with the hotel there. They gave him the Spirit of Hampton Award. It's an honor given to 10 employees for the more than 2,200 hotels across the nation. And, of course, he's going to get the trophy and a $350 check. So, congratulations, buddy. Good job. That's the kind of folks we like to see out there. People that are just, he says he just chooses to be happy. Yep, it is a choice, folks. Let's go to James Island, talk to Joey. Joey, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Wonderful. What's up?
Well, I think you've already mentioned it a little bit, but why won't somebody call in and explain to the taxpayers how they came up with the money to get these bikes?
Well, this, from what we hear, This was a program. Now, John Steinberger said that it was a sort of an offshoot of a college program. But still, I want to know if taxpayer money was being used, because these bike corrals have to be paid for by somebody, the bikes themselves. And who's paying the electric bill for these bike corrals?
Well, every time there's a, you know, let's do something for the public feel-good program, mm-hmm. the taxpayers always get bit in the rear end.
Right.
Like, all the time. Okay? I mean, who's gonna pay the mechanic?
Yeah.
Don't you think these bikes are going to be ridden through that tidal water down these streets?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But who's going to, I mean, is it one bike fits all size?
Gosh, that's a good question.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just who's going to pay the mechanic?
Yeah, somebody's got to maintain these things, and I would love to know where the funding for that's coming from.
Well, and also, you know, every time these programs come up, a liberal comes up with an idea of this feel-good program, you never see them reaching into their pocket,
yeah.
you know, and coming up with the money. It's always the taxpayers have to, but they'll take credit for the idea.
Yeah.
And have fanfare and the press out there and the whole nine yards. But, you know, I don't know if all the public knows this, but every year the police department, all these police departments, they grab bikes that are stolen, abandoned, and they have hundreds of bikes over at the police department that they give away just about at auction.
Yeah.
Why can't... You know, if they want to try this pilot program, go over there, because the police department needs money all the time. Why don't they just go over there and, purchase these bikes from the police department, do the same kind of program, and see how it works?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know, Joey. Again, I appreciate you calling in. I don't know enough about this program right now to say that, you know, are the taxpayers going to be on the hook for the maintenance of these bikes, or is this Holy Spokes company going to take care of that? Is that part of the $8 an hour, however much a month, and then $69 a year that people are going to be paying for to ride these bikes? $69 a year? That's kind of interesting. So, but you go to these corrals, and they're electronically operated because the locks are automatic. And you have a little app, like you call up your Uber or whatever. You say, hey, I want to ride this bike. And then it sends you a code. You put the code in. And I guess it's Bluetooth or whatever. And it'll unlock your bike. And you can drive wherever you want to with this bike. So it's just going to be interesting to see who actually pays for this and how successful it's going to be. Because to me, more bikes on the road are going to mean the potential for more injury downtown. And I think some people are right that they're trying to make sure that you get out of your cars. They don't want you riding around in your cars downtown. I mean, it's, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, it's, you know, they're combating global warming, but I really don't know. I mean, they're trying to make us something that we're not. And that's this bike friendly town. And we're just not built for that right now. I mean, we don't want them riding on the sidewalks. Well, all right, so what happens? What happens if somebody with one of these bikes slams into your car and the pedal of this car goes down the side, the pedal of this bike goes down the side of your car and scratches your paint? Does this company have insurance for that? Will they cover that in case of an injury? I don't know. I don't know what happens if a bicyclist hits a kid. Who knows?